Foundation presents the Phoenix Rising Podcast, brought to you by Zwift, the ultimate indoor training app. Fun is fast. Head to Zwift.com.
Welcome back once again to Phoenix Rising. Thank you to all of you who listen, watch, and learn along with me on this show as we hear some of the stories of the world's most elite sports people, what motivates them, what makes them who they are, and how they continually rise. Now, in this episode, I'm so lucky to be joined by someone who has such an interesting and a beautiful story, and one that truly illustrates the winding journey, I guess, that all of us are on in some capacity. One of incredibly high highs and some pretty low lows as well, and the determination and the resilience shown to just keep on rising. So welcome to the show, Team GB track superstar. I suppose I could call you superstar, Jody Williams.
I don't know about the superstar part, but thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
First question, how are you rising today? What's one good thing that's happened to you today?
Today, I've pretty much finished unpacking. So I moved to Atlanta in the last month. My furniture was shipped from Phoenix over to here. It took 3 weeks, so I've been sleeping on an air mattress. So I'm very happy that that is all now. Everything's arrived and I'm pretty much unpacked. So that's definitely a plus of today.
I'm loving that idea that you can be like, you know, multiple Olympian sleeping on an air mattress. Like that's very much like, you know, we're all real human people who have to deal with the same thing, like moving house and everything being in boxes and eating pizza on the floor.
Exactly. That's the life I've been living for the last 3 weeks. And it's, yeah, a lot more common than you would think amongst athletes because we move frequently. So, yeah, lack of furniture is definitely a common theme amongst us all.
So this podcast, it's all about, you know, mental strength, motivation and resilience and those things that are, I guess, applicable to everyone, no matter their goals or their dreams or whether they play sport or they work as an accountant or they're still in high school or, you know, it's important for everyone. But sports stars, you know, I have found often live at the extremes of these things and they experience them and they need them in huge doses, and you especially. So let's go back to the beginning and this journey as a sprinter. How did it start for you? What was Jody Williams like as a kid? Well, I imagine just from like watching your Instagram and stuff, that you were like hyperactive, but I'm not sure. You tell me, what were you like when you were young?
That's so funny. I was probably the opposite, actually. I'm naturally very introverted. I spend a lot of time, I'm a bit of a loner. I spend a lot of time on my own and I spend a lot of time in my space inside, which is why my furniture was such a big thing for me. But yeah, as a kid, I was actually very shy, very awkward. Yeah, sport was kind of like my outlet and my way to connect to people. I really struggled with social anxiety very badly when I was younger. So sport was always my way to, yeah, connect with my peers and kind of let go of that, you know, nervous energy a little bit and channel it into something more productive, and fortunately something that I was pretty good at too.
It's funny that you say that. I mean, a lot of people struggle with those kinds of things when they're a kid and they don't feel like they don't fit in, and maybe some of them like really attached to something, you know. And I was the same when I was younger as well. And to learn how to cope, like almost like a coping mechanism. Is that what motivated you in the beginning, before you knew? Because there's always a spot where you go, okay, I'm going to go do this sport, and you're not very good at it, but you've got to push through that period of time before you start learning more. Was the relief of the anxiety that you felt on a day-to-day basis the thing that motivated you in the early parts to get through that bit where you know you're no good at something, but it allows you to focus and gives you an outlet?
Yeah, funnily enough, I was, well, probably not funny enough considering I'm an elite athlete. I've always been very naturally sporty. So I guess for me, sport was something that I picked up very easily and very quickly. And so it kind of alleviated a lot of that. Like, I just didn't feel like I didn't feel like I fit in. Didn't feel like I was very good at just like everyday life things other kids seem to be able to do naturally, like make friends and go off. I struggled with hugely. So I think for me, sport was that outlet where I really got to shine. And, you know, it was somewhere where I felt comfortable. I felt very uncomfortable for a lot of my childhood. So for me, sport was an arena where I was like, no, I belong here. Like, I'm good at this and I'm comfortable here. And it was, yeah, I guess I created a little safe haven for myself within sport.
It's interesting that you say that. So do you feel like that same kid now? Because I only say that because I was just speaking to someone, a triathlete called Nicola Spirey, and she's been to 5 Olympics. She won 2 Olympic medals. She's 6-time European champion. She's probably one of the best to ever do it. And I said, do you still feel like the same? She said, I always felt uncomfortable. Or I always felt like I didn't have confidence. I just, you know, and I still don't have confidence. I'm like, but you won all these medals. She's like, yes, but what about today? Like, what about today? You know, I'm still the same person as I was 20 years ago. Do you still sometimes feel like the same person? Like you've got this incredible resume and you've won 150 races in a row. It doesn't make you a different person. So do you still feel sometimes like that same kid anyway, even though you've got this incredible resume now?
Absolutely. I think my external achievements are just a way for me to brush over the fact that I'm still a very awkward kid at heart. I definitely still feel that on a daily basis. I've done a lot of work personally to try and overcome a lot of that. So I'm definitely a lot more comfortable within my own skin now. I've kind of just radically accepted myself for all of my awkwardness and discomfort. But it's still there. I'm just embrace it now. I'm just like, well, that's just how I am. I'm pretty awkward. I feel uncomfortable in social situations still, you know. I still get super nervous before races. I still doubt myself. I still find myself in situations where I'm like, what am I doing here? How am I here in this room? Like, I don't belong here. So yeah, I still definitely struggle with those things on a daily basis. I still very much feel like that shy, awkward kid. But yeah, like I said, I've just kind of radically accepted that, yeah, I'm a little weird. I'm a little awkward, and I'm fine with it now.
What's your day-to-day to cope with that? Because anyone who has any kind of anxiety or deals with that or just feels different, and I think like a lot of people have it to some extent.
Absolutely.
I'm 38 now, and it's only in the last 12 months that I've gone, okay, I'm going to do this number of things and it's going to anchor my day. I'm going to journal. I'm going to meditate every day. I'm going to, you know, and actually stuck with it. And I've got about 7 things, and it doesn't matter what else happens in the day. If I can get up in the morning and I just knock all of these things out, I'm like, okay, I'm grounded. The anxiety's low. I can go forward and I can create and achieve and I can feel good about myself. What are your little things that you do? Because I'm sure that there are some that you go, okay, every day I do this and that, and it helps pin me down so that I can have a platform to move forward and attack my day.
Yeah, I am a heavily routine-based person. I wake up and my morning routine is very important to me. I'm a morning person. I'm productive in the morning, so I guess I'm anchored in my routine. I'm a writer, which feels weird to say, but I've always very much expressed myself through writing and journaling. So that's definitely a huge part of what keeps me grounded and anchored is I journal every day. But yeah, definitely my routines. Like I wake up, I make my coffee. I'm a big, big coffee fanatic. So that whole process kind of calms me and soothes me. I listen to a podcast pretty much every morning just to channel, I guess, like I wake up with a lot of nervous energy and a lot of like racing thoughts. So when I listen to podcasts or audiobooks, it kind of channels that thought process into whatever the podcast is talking about. And I feel like then that energy is used to think along whatever lines the podcast is on. And then training. Definitely, like exercise has always been a huge outlet for me. Even when I'm not training, I stay very active. Yeah, so definitely coffee, podcasts, writing, and movement.
That is my top. That is my 4 as well. You are speaking. It's like I'm listening to myself talk back. except instead, like, you know, I just go to the gym and struggle, and you go to the Olympics. So apart from that part, everything's exactly the same. Well, that's how people who deal with anxiety do it. You know, like there's little outlets and keep your mind focused and keep your body. You know, like it's a holistic health scenario. And then, let's go back to you when you're a junior, because I feel like the iteration of Jodie Williams now and the one then is probably different in a whole bunch of different ways and has seen a whole bunch of different things. But if you go back to your juniors, and I thought it was a typo, it was 151 straight wins in the juniors. Like, that's not possible to do 100 and 200 world junior champ, first to ever do it at the same time. And, like, to embarrass you, I read that your nickname was Miss Money Legs, right? A lot of pressure to carry on into an elite career, right? Like, you don't get a junior career. Like, that's a Michael Phelps-level junior career. And and I feel like, and I went to the Olympic Games in London working, and I'd never seen so much fanfare around the Olympic Games. Like, there was this Team GB idea into London. It was like a six-year plan, and, you know, and then here she goes, the chosen one, done all this stuff. What happened? You know, what was it, internal factors, external factors, or both? And how on earth did you cope with the, I guess, what was written in the stars not being fulfilled in the way that you probably expected at the time?
Yeah, it was a crazy time. And like you said, like, I'm so far removed from it now. I feel like a completely different human being, but my heart really goes out to that younger version of myself, because I really struggled. Like, I know I say I'm still that awkward kid now, but I was still a child at that point, and I was still very much living in that very uncomfortable phase of my life. I experienced my teenage years very much in the spotlight, and, you know, those formative years when you're figuring out who you are, and you know, I've got normal teenage stuff going on alongside the fact that I'm this, I don't know, crazy athlete. So it was tough for sure, and I think it was a mixture of factors. I ended up getting very injured in 2012, which I could probably pinpoint to mental factors, honestly. Like you said, the build up to 2012 was crazy. Like, 2012 had been on my radar, so I pretty much grew up with 2012 being it. Like you said, there was a huge lead up. So I remember I must have been about maybe 10, 11, probably maybe 12, 13 when it was announced that, you know, we would have the games. And at this point, I was maybe like a year or two into my career. I was a child, obviously, but I'd already begun my athletic career. And I was like, okay, that's what we're going to do. I'm going to go to London 2012 and I'm going to win. And I pretty much pinpointed my whole identity on that idea of, I'm going to a home Olympics and I'm going to win it. And man, for about 4 or 5 years, it was going really well. Like you said, I hadn't been beaten. And I was like, what could go wrong here? Apart from the fact that there was a huge amount of pressure on me, and, you know, outside of track, I was an absolute mess, and the pressure was definitely getting to me. But that pressure fueled me. I was fueled by fear, and that's the only reason I was really just winning, is because I was terrified of what happens if I lose. Like, my whole identity is surrounded by, I'm a winner. That's what I do. And yeah, like I said, it alleviated a lot of that social pressure. You know, it was easy to talk to people because now people would speak to me and they had a topic to talk about. And that was easy because I had, like, you know, I had answers ready to go and I didn't have to think about it. So I never really developed like a personality outside of, okay, Jodie the athlete with the set number of questions and answers. And that was my whole personality. And then, yeah, 2012 comes around and it's great. 2010, I think I lost my first ever race and it was a big blow, but I bounced back and had a really good 2011. I was still running really fast. I was still up there with the top girls in the country. And yeah, it had been pretty much pinpointed that I would be, you know, I was up there with these superstar names. And it didn't happen. You know, I tore my hamstring 3-4 times that year. And one of them being at the trials. And yeah, it kind of just felt like my whole everything, identity, life, everything I'd been working towards for my, what felt like such a long time, but was 18, came crashing down on live national television, and I had a camera in my face just filming like the worst, like my worst nightmare. Like if I could think of the worst thing that could possibly happen, it was happening on television. And like, I just couldn't really process it for a long time. But looking back, it was a blessing, honestly. If I had gone to that Olympics, and I, you know, some of my peers went, Katarina Johnson-Thompson, Adam Jamili, Andy Pozzi, like those were my peers. We had been to champs together and they blew up after that Olympics. And knowing what my status was going into that, I just don't think I would have been able to handle what would have happened post that Games. So, I mean, it would have been great because, man, I would have been set. But yeah, it's definitely a blessing now looking back on it because I had time to actually, yeah, figure out, man, who am I outside of this thing that I've built, this glass house that I've got around me has come shattering down, and now I actually have time to, you know, delve into me a little bit.
That's such a great way to look at it, and I love that you've had the time, and you've had the years, and you had the Olympic experiences to go back and put that in a fresh perspective, and know that on a holistic view, you probably would be a completely different person if that hadn't happened to you. And on a very small scale, similar thing happened to me, like very much into playing rugby was what I was going to do. Totally socially awkward and anxious outside of that. Felt good in it. Had 3 knee reconstructions. Never play again by the time I was 19. And I know I went completely off the rails after that. Like just could not cope with it. And I didn't happen on TV and it wasn't the Olympics. It was just a small thing, but I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there who can relate in their own small. I'm hoping we got the end of that. That was a really good answer. So I'm sure it just cut me off, which is fine. Although mine was obviously awesome too, but all right, we'll just pick up straight from there. If that's okay. Unless you want to answer that call or whatever, we can wait.
No. We're fine.
I'm sure a lot of people can relate in their own small ways to that, but like as I said at the start of the podcast, how heightened that is when it's so focused and it's such a big goal and you're on television. I can't imagine how you must have coped in the moment, because now you've got the benefit of hindsight, and it's so good that you've been able to mentally put that in the, not the box, but you've been able to reframe it and know that you would have been a completely different person had that not happened. And now, obviously, you've had such successes since then that it's probably easier to look back on it in that way. But at the time, like something similar happened to me, and I went completely off the rails for about 5 years until I came back mentally and was able to process what happened to me in the same way, like with injury and sport and not being able to play anymore and having so much of my identity wrapped up in that because I was good at that and I wasn't good at the rest of the stuff, just like you. What were those months after? What did they look like? Did you completely disappear from the sport? How did you cope mentally? Did you, I remember making a whole bunch of decisions I wouldn't have made again in that time. But how did you come back together, basically, is what I'm asking, after that?
It's funny you say that, because I went completely off the rails for about 5 years too. I'd say I probably only just got back on the rails in the last 18 months. Not necessarily from that one time, but after that, it really sent me down a spiral of just negativity. If you can describe my junior career as a huge success, you can describe that middle part of my career as just an absolute disaster. Like I could not, for the life of me, bounce back into that mental state that I'd got myself into. I pretty much went the opposite way. Like I said, I was governed by fear. That's the only reason I was winning. I mean, I'm sure I was fast too, but like anybody that has won, knows that winning is a mentality. It's not just
a physical capability. You might be the best person on that start line, but if you don't have a winner's mentality, you will not win the race. So for me, it took a long time to figure out how was I going to win when this fear is no longer working for me anymore. It was doing the opposite. I became so absolutely terrified of succeeding that I was deliberately sabotaging myself effectively for, I can't even tell you how long. So straight after 2012, I disappeared. I decided I needed a whole new team around me effectively, and I changed coach and switched up my agents and kind of tried to take some ownership over my life. And it was good for a little while. I had some successes in 2014. But I was just really struggling as a human. Aside from being an athlete, I was really not having a good time mentally at all. Like I said, I became extremely fearful of success and what success had effectively done to me in the past. I blamed being successful for all of my mental anguish. I had lost so much and so much of my identity that I never wanted to be that successful again, because there was just too much at stake. So yeah, like I said, I pretty much started sabotaging myself. I was living in chronic stress. So I was just always getting injured. I had a lot of health issues. I just really couldn't put it together for a long time. And it took me a long time to figure out what it was about the sport that I loved. And I had to fall in love with training again. I had to fall in love with the sport again. I had to fall in love with a lot of stuff again and figure out myself off the track, outside of the track. And that took a long time. And you can see it through my athletic career. 2017 was another home champs. And again, I didn't make the team. And mentally for me, that was another huge blow. So I pretty much just had like 5 years of just everything, all the failures that had been owed to me over those, that period of success got thrown back at me for that next 5 years. And I honestly kind of just felt like I was drowning for a long time. Probably only until recently had I really figured out what it was that I loved about the sport, and I remembered how to win again.
How close did you come to just giving it away, and what stopped you, I guess, during those periods of time? Because, you know, it all consuming for so long, I could see how you probably got very close to just going, you know what, I'm just going to go and, you know, live in South America on the beach, or I'm going to go become an accountant in whatever. Like, you know, it's a big wide world out there. Did you ever get really close? And what stopped you? Was there was still that just little kernel of like knowing that there's a love for the sport in there somewhere?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I always talked about just disappearing and starting a new life somewhere on a beach somewhere and just, I'm done with this. I came very close to quitting a number of times. 2017 was definitely like a big turning point for me. When I didn't make another home team, it was like I genuinely feel like it was PTSD. It brought up so much emotional baggage not making that team again. And I think I'd put all of my emphasis into 2017 being like, oh, I get to redeem myself, and it had been a five-year wait for me to be able to compete in that stadium and do it again, and I didn't make the team, and I couldn't believe it, honestly. I should have believed it because I didn't work hard enough during that year. I was really struggling with health that year. I was not well at all, and I pretty much just partied all year. I wasn't mentally checked in. And so I don't know why I even expected to make the team, but when I didn't, I just couldn't believe it. And that was probably the time when I was like, I don't think I can physically do this. I didn't feel like I had a choice. But somehow I picked myself back up again and tried again. 2018 went better. 2019 was another huge blow. And I think if the world hadn't have shut down and I didn't have a time where I could just, nothing was open, right? Like the world shut, there was no tracks, there was no facilities. And I just kind of got back to the basics of what I loved about the sport. I had no access to anything fancy. There was no technical training. There was no one around me. It was just me and running. And it clicked again for me what it was that I loved about the sport so much. And I genuinely love to run. It's always been an escape for me. And I got back to that. You know, I was running in fields and on trails and through forests. And it was so much fun. Like, I was having fun again. I got back to that. I love working hard at something. And I had lost that along the way. I got so bogged down with like the mental side of sport and the technicalities and, you know, all of the external stuff. And I forgot that, Jody, you just love to run. Like, this is who you are. I got back to that and I switched events. I switched to a more grueling event and it just gave me a new lease of life, really, and something, a new challenge to work towards. And like I said, it renewed my love of the sport again when I just really got back to the basics of what it was that I loved.
So you ditched the bullshit and replaced the fear with just the love coming, the fear from the outside, rather than the love from the inside of just doing exactly what you want to do, not what everyone expects of you to do.
Exactly. I just got tired of, I would say I got tired of people's expectations, but it was my own expectations too. You know, I'd put myself on a pedestal. You know, I was like, this isn't who you are. Like, you're supposed to be great. You're supposed to have achieved all of these things. Like, you are meant to be the next big thing and you're just not, you're failing in every corner of this. Like, you're not, got to the point where I wasn't even making, like, I think in 2018, I didn't make a European final. And I was just like, that's not you. Like, that's ridiculous. Like you said, I ditched the bullshit. I got rid of all of the external people in my ear and social media and my own bullshit expectations of what I thought I should be and where I should be, and just got back to, yeah, the love of hard work and a little bit of grit. I had a UK winter and it was miserable in all the best ways. I just really got back down to humbling myself all the way and just saying, we're starting from scratch. It paid off.
So 7 years after your last international podium, you step up to the 400 meters, like you say, you win the bronze this year at the European Indoors. How full circle did that moment feel to you? Because, I mean, I suppose 18-year-old Jody would be like, yeah, bronze at the European Indoors. Meh,
yeah.
Where's the Olympic triple gold?
Yeah.
But now, to know that what that represents, I mean, how vindicated did you feel in yourself, and what did that mean to you to do that again?
It's so funny because, like, when I was winning all the time, winning felt like a norm. Like, I didn't appreciate it. It wasn't hard work because I had never not won. Like, yeah, for sure, I trained hard and, you know, but my expectation was always to stand on the line and win. So it never felt good. Like, it was a relief. When I crossed the finish line and it was first, I was like, oh, thank goodness. Okay, I don't have to deal with the fallout. Whereas standing on that podium, so European Indoors was my first ever senior championships in 2011. And then 10 years later, it's, you know, my first medal in a long time. I was captain of the team. And I really wanted to lead by example. I really wanted to show the young guys on the team, like, this is how we do it. And yeah, for me, it was just, I went there to win. You know, I definitely, I could feel in myself that I was back. Like I could, it's a feeling that you have, like I had this crazy sense of confidence again. And I stood on that start line and I was like, I know I'm going to medal. Like at the very least, I'm medaling here. And yeah, I came away with bronze. I was a little bit gutted that I didn't win, honestly, but I was so grateful for everything that I'd been through and for everybody that had stuck by me and so many people. I say so many people, a handful of people stuck by me and believed in me. And I was happy that it paid off for them too, because it's getting to the point where I was like, oh, man, these guys are really believing in me and I don't know if I'm going to pull it off. But yeah, it was great. And it was the first time I'd really experienced being grateful for the success. Like I felt like I put in the work and I was receiving the benefits. And it was awesome.
It's a really mature answer, and like it's the answer of someone who's been through a lot. And it's funny because the next question I've got written down there just says gratefulness is the next thing I wanted to talk about, because that's something that when things don't go to plan and there's a lot of anger, like there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of frustration, there's a lot of why me, and I've been through that too. A long time, you're like, well, I expected to be here and now I'm here. Why am I not there? That's what I said I was going to be doing. But then every day, like I wake up and I write down three things I'm grateful for, and then I do it again at night. And it just makes everything, it's incredible. It's like a muscle, gratefulness, to keep exercising and then to realize how incredible things are that you are achieving, even if it's not what you anticipated. I think it's something everyone needs to work on. And I guess there's a really... an easy way to do this. You go, okay, so tell me about the difference mentally, gratefulness wise, between Rio and Tokyo, because you missed the podium in Tokyo, but you were so, I saw your answer afterwards, you were so grateful about coming to 400 so late, running a 49, focusing on the things that you are grateful for, finishing sixth in Tokyo, and how proud and how grateful you are. Whereas I feel like old Jody might have been like, I didn't get a medal, you know, and there's probably a bit of that. But I could see how quickly you were turning it around. Even in your post-race, you were already framing it in a way that you felt so grateful to be able to have this second lease on your career.
Yeah, and I think that is it. Like, it's been a huge mental shift for me. And like you said, I was very much stuck in that just perpetual cycle of, why is this happening to me? Why me? Why this? This is awful. You know, what am I being punished for and all of that. And I got stuck in that negative cycle for such a long time. And it was ridiculous, honestly. Like, for sure, I experienced hardships. But the reality is, like, I'm in a fortunate enough position that I've been enabled to pursue something that I'm extremely passionate about. And I kind of switched my mentality to, like, you get to do this. Yep, you work very hard and you've chosen this more difficult path. But at the same time, you are fortunate enough that you're in a position and, you know, you were born in the right place and all of these things that you can pursue that. And that is an option for you. And yeah, like you said, in Tokyo, I was just very grateful. I've definitely noticed over the last 2 years that I very quickly switched any negative self-talk into trying to be grateful for something or finding something positive. And like, I'm very naturally attuned to being miserable. Like, that's just, I am that way. And like, I like to be miserable. I'm not one of those, you know.
How British. That's very British of you.
Exactly. I'm very British. Like, that's me. Like, I've never been one of those, like, hyper-positive, like, let's go get it, people. Like, that's just never been me. But I've definitely noticed over the last couple of years that I switched that into, let's look at the, not always the positives, because there isn't always a positive, and that's, I don't like that false positivity finding something great in everything, I think that can be equally as detrimental. Sometimes it just sucks. But it is that, it's accepting, okay, this sucks. But it's not like, oh, woe is me and why me and all of this. It's okay, this sucks. But let's accept that it sucks. And let's try and do something to get ourselves out of this. Or let's find something that we can be grateful about. Or, you know, like you said, I came sixth and it's not what I went there to do. I went there to win. I went there to be on the podium. And I was very blatant about that in the whole lead up. Like I had said very much, like, I'm here to win. And I didn't do it. And I was like, oh, I was gutted. But in the same breath, I was like, but Joni, look at how far you've come in such a short period of time. And it was the first championships I've ever been to where I appreciated every moment of it. Like, there's a photo of me walking out to the Olympic final. And like, for the first time in my life, I took a moment and I was like, wow. Like,
yeah, you're in the goddamn Olympic final. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Like, before, I would just never have done that. I was always very much like, okay. And like, I have this very like aggressive persona about me when I'm racing, and I was always very serious. And I was like, scrap that. Jody, like, you've got the reigning Olympic champion outside of you, inside of you. Your like childhood hero in the lane outside of you. Like, you're in an Olympic final. This is, you're the top eight in the world. Damn. Like, let's go out there and let's have a good time. And that is the approach I took. Like, I was very serious about it. Obviously, this is an Olympic final and I'm trying to win. But I really was very, very present in the moment. And I've never really done that before during such a big time. So I'm grateful for that even. I'm grateful that I had that sense of calm about me, and I took in, I experienced every second of that final, and I loved every second of it. So yeah, it was great.
It's an incredible story, and it's so lovely to hear someone who's had so many headwinds to allow themselves to be present in an experience like that and not carry in the victimhood and the fear that have driven you, I suppose, for so long. And you know, it's funny because I've got a question here. The last question I was going to ask you, you basically answered it in every question already, right? But like, I always try and ask people, like, you know, if you could go back to the 2011 or the 2015 or the 2008 version of Jody, like, what advice would you give? What's a sentence of advice that you would give? But I think that this entire 40 minutes has been that, because it's so clearly defined the differences and the evolution you've made, especially in the last couple of years. But if you could go back to 2012, let's say around November 2012 version of you, and pat yourself on the shoulder and say, hey, what would you say?
I'd say, hey, well, number one, you're going to be fine, girl. Like, there's more to life than this. You're going to find a greater purpose than just yourself. This journey is going to turn into something greater than you, and it's not going to be the one that you envisaged at all. You're not going to succeed the way you thought you were going to succeed, and you know, you're not going to be some crazy four-time Olympic champion that's written into the history books, but you're going to turn this into something better, honestly. And you're going to use this to give back to other people, and hopefully other people will find some kind of something, some kind of association, or they're going to be able to see themselves in you, and that's going to be a greater gift than you just being successful on your own. You're going to have the power to bring other people up with you, and that's better than the path that you wanted to be on.
I feel like 2012 Jody would have focused on, I'm not going to be a four-time Olympic champion, and forgotten about the rest.
She would be real mad about that. She'd be like, girl, get out of my face right now.
You don't know me, right? You don't, you're like, yes,
yeah,
I do.
You don't know
I know you very well.
About me.
All right, we like to end each of these podcasts with the Zwift Fast Five questions. So you've got one word or maybe one sentence to answer these five questions. You ready?
Okay.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Do you?
You probably received that from your future self to your past self. I think that's... Yeah. What's the worst piece of advice you've ever received?
The worst piece of advice I've ever received. Winning is everything.
You heard that from people?
Oh, from lots of people. Mm. Yeah.
I can imagine.
It's sport, right? That's what we're here for.
I mean, that's basically the slogan for about 15 different shoe companies, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. What's the one thing people should do every day for their mental health and motivation?
Meditate.
Agree. What's your personal motto? What's a sentence that you live by or you try to live by every day?
Be fearless in the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. I have it tattooed on my ribs.
Ah, you've got a few tattoos, don't you? I've seen another one that was, I remember you saying it was great at the time, but it's terrible advice now. What was it? What's it? You've got a tattoo somewhere.
Pain is temporary. Victory is forever.
Oh, have it on my ribs. Oh, that probably needs an amendment. Hey,
I'm gonna have to. That was my first ever tattoo. Funnily enough, 2012, Jody, and it was meant as motivation to get me so I could look down during my training sessions and see the words "pain is temporary, victory is forever." And it's terrible advice. In fact. I'm going to change my old one. That's the worst advice I've ever received.
The one that you tattooed on yourself. That's funny. That's a little talisman, I think. And what motivates you today to keep rising? What motivates you to go into 2022? What's your thing that keeps you rising every day?
I would definitely say empowering others, particularly women and girls. That's something I'm definitely very passionate about and is now pretty much my motivation going forwards. Everything I do, I want to bring other young girls and women up with me and open as many doors as I possibly can.
What do you do? I mean, as an addendum to that, I mean, what is it that you do? I know that you, I mean, I came to you via Instagram, where I know that you and Sheeta Lenny, who works with Phoenix, are both working or have done some work with the same group. I mean, what do you do on a, you know, in a legacy sense to help young women in sport and obviously, you know, both in the UK and the US within athletics and in a wider sense in the community?
Yeah, I definitely like to focus on a wider sense. So I work with an organization called FemLead, which is where I sent Sheeta. We're based in Uganda, and our aim is to empower young girls, mainly to stay within education, and we combat pretty much child marriage, young pregnancy, and period poverty. We run workshops where the girls have a safe space to speak about their fears and things that are going on in their lives. We help young pregnant girls take care of their children and get back into education and try and educate girls on their rights. And that's how I linked up with Sheeta. I thought, you know, being this incredible Ugandan Olympian, what better role model for these young girls to be able to look up to? So I connected Sheeta and Esther, who is our director out there, and she went to our workshops and handed out sanitary towels and gave the girls an incredible motivational speech. So I think that's really what I'm about. I like to connect people any way that I can, particularly women who are trying to, who are doing great work within their communities and don't necessarily have the backing or platform or access to, you know, resources that they deserve to have. And I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where, you know, my voice carries weight and I can put people in contact with others and, you know, get them the resources that they need. That's really my main focus. I like to facilitate and and try and get people collaborating together. Have a podcast too called Coffee Conversations. So I speak to women who are, you know, in various different fields from around the world, who are challenging the status quo in some way, and speak to them on their idea of success and how they got into their field. And I really want to just open up a conversation about success and failures, and enable women to see that there is no linear path, and success is, it's a difficult journey, but it's attainable. And hopefully they'll be able to resonate with some of the things that the women on the podcast are talking about. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
It's really interesting hearing you talk about that, because I think as we all know, the more internally ordered you are, the more your focus starts to shift to what is external and how you can affect the world in external ways. But you need to have your internal world ordered first. And I think that's probably something that you've experienced over the last couple of years. And something that also stood out to me there is when you say, you know, success is not a linear path. Success, I mean, you would probably consider yourself more successful as a human than maybe if you had have ended up winning gold in London and going on a completely different path that could have sent you in a completely different way. And there's plenty of extremely successful athletes out there who've won multiple world championships who are miserable. But you don't strike me as someone who is that. So it's been a real privilege to discuss this with you. And thank you so much for your honesty on this podcast. It's been fantastic to hear. And I really hope that people can take something away from that, because your adaptability and your vulnerability has been a privilege to listen to. So thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me on and having this conversation with me.
Absolutely. There you go, everyone. Jody Williams, I hope you enjoyed Phoenix Rising. We've got plenty more coming up in 2022. What's coming up for you in 2022? What's the last thing? Tell me what you're doing and how people can follow along with you. What's your big competition? What's happening?
So we have three major champs, world champs, home Commonwealths, and Europeans as well. So yeah, very, very busy summer for me. Instagram is where I'm most active. So at Jody Alicia. And yeah, I post all things sport, coffee, external nonprofit work, everything goes on there, podcasts, all of that. So yeah, Instagram is where to keep up.
Jody, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.